Spring Candy, episode 795. We're back. Better than ever.
795. Nice. I like that number. Nice. I don't know. It's not even, probably, but
feels real good.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Feels lucky.
How you doing, Sus? Yeah.
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. I'm very excited because, like, we're gearing up. I got a big spring cooking.
I'm really excited.
Thanks.
Season of
Sarah's
wonder.
Sarah's coming. Road trips, path of totality.
Road trip.
I got
it. I'll share with our listeners. Susie and I was discussing that Susie and I are doing our little meetup. And then on our road trip back from the meetup, we're going to be going to where the solar eclipse is taking place. So we're going to see that. And I was talking to Eli about how excited I am about all this. And then he came to me like a few days later and was like, you know, I'm just really sad that I didn't get invited to the family vacation with you and Susie and Adam and Lincoln.
Family. I mean, can you imagine though?
He like, used those words, driving. Family vacation. And I was like, oh,
I mean,
sorry,
he's not wrong.
I know, but I was like, it's a work trip, but it'll be real fun. And I was like trying to pretend like it's not going to be super exciting. And he's totally missing out.
I mean, it's going to be like the Griswolds, though, because we're going from Pittsburgh to Philly. And imagine he would have had to be like between you and Lincoln in the back seat or something.
I know. Right.
Like, I don't think
between
he
our games
knows
of 20
what
questions.
Yeah.
Right.
He would regret that if he came.
He's good on a road trip,
yeah,
though. So.
It's going to be a hoot. I know that.
It'll be really fun. We have Challenge Mania coming up. We're going to see a lot of our brainiacs at Challenge Mania. Mm-hmm. They've written me to let me know they'll be coming.
I recruited a OG cast member to be a surprise guest.
Really? Okay. Yeah. It'll be a surprise
for
everybody
then. I'll tell you a secret.
Yeah. Tell me. Ooh, I'm so excited. Yeah. Yes.
How are you?
Okay. How are you? I'm doing good. I'm thinking I'm ready to go back out on the mountain and go try snowboarding again. I'm feeling good about it. You know, as well, I'm just going to take it easy. Things like jumping up and down and running and high impact stuff is off the table. But I feel like I can do a chill snowboard session that wouldn't be high impact as long as nobody crashes into me.
I think that's risky business, but
a little bit. I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, so we're going to run it by them and see what they say.
Yeah, I want to know what they say because I feel like
they do those things
where
it's like, whatever you feel, you're ready to do. Yes, there is an inherent risk.
But that's not true in this case because this is about like other people being careful too.
Right. That is totally true. That is the part, like if somebody crashes in. I mean, I'm not going to like bust a seam or something, but it could just hurt. I hope not too. But I think I'll be okay. Let's see. Where do I want to start? So many different little stories. I feel like we have to talk about this because it's everywhere and I just want to mention it. Have you seen everything that's going on with the Ruby Frankie case? Do you know who this is?
Oh, yeah. That YouTuber lady.
Yes. So Ruby Frankie was part of the Mormon mom YouTube, I don't know, whole
contingent.
Yes. Yeah. And
subculture.
I want to say it was like 2016 or 2018 where she started a YouTube channel with her six kids and husband.
Yeah.
And then and went on as to collect 2 million followers on her channel who are all tuning in for parenting tips and, you know,
that's
life
a lot
lessons,
of people.
A lot of people.
Those and Mormons, they really know how to do social. I mean,
oh my God.
I'll hand it like, to them.
I mean, isn't that kind of like their thing? Like spreading the word and missionary work?
You mean, oh yeah, for sure. Okay,
this
so you
like,
feel like their skill set like lends itself to really good branding.
Yes,
and
totally.
Okay, yeah. You must be right, because man, they're killing it.
Yeah, or were. And yeah. And so, you know, things started to get a little, people started to get suspicious when she started posting some content about disciplinary action and things like withholding food. And then a neighbor, one of her neighbors gets a knock on the door and it's her son who's escaped and he has like wounds on his wrist from being tied up, and he's severely malnourished. And the police come and find another child who's in similar condition, and they end up taking her away. And now she's been sentenced to, I think it's 60 years.
It's like, it was a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
I thought I read 30, but either way, it's decades.
Oh, maybe 30. Yeah, but a long time. And she's definitely, and the thing that's crazy to me is how long it went on and how popular she became before people started stepping in and saying something's wrong here. And it's crazy to me how her husband claims that he was not aware of what was going on.
Yeah, it was her and some weird partner lady. Yeah. I don't really understand the role of that person, but it seemed to coincide with her introduction to the family when things went sideways. But was, in what you read, was there any insight into like how Ruby lost her way? Because that is really, how do you get to that point where you can justify that treatment of your children?
So she has two sisters, and her sisters were also creating YouTube content, and it felt almost like she was falling in line doing, you know, the family business. And I think in her mind, it was so important to create this content and then to be really transparent. And, but transparent, but at the same time, keeping up this image of everything's good and I have perfectly well-behaved children. What it made me think of was that, what was it? Keep Sweet or something like that. The documentary that talked about the kind of punishment that they used for children to teach them to stay in line, and how it was like corporal punishment. And, you know, the baby crawls off the play mat and they get.
Oh, that was the Duggars.
Oh, the Duggars. That was the Duggar one. Yes.
I mean,
get confused between my religious fundamentalists.
Zealots.
And, yeah, exactly.
Right. But it's just strange because you kind of expect that sort of thing with cults and fundamentalism. But this woman began as idyllic parent, somebody that's like a model of parenting. And then clearly things veered. Like, do you think that she was suffering some sort of mental problem? Or do you think this, what, how do you do
no,
that?
No, I think she's
understand.
Maybe a narcissist. And
that was all she could think about was just her own image.
Yeah.
And not,
yeah,
wow, that's
I think
crazy.
So. And there, I was listening to a podcast on it. And there was a neighbor, somebody who was a friend of the family, that said they noticed that they would start to say things at, like, you know, parties and events that were just peculiar. Like, she would talk about putting all of her kids to bed, like, with the Tylenol PM and giving them, like, adult drugs to just, you know, she seemed like she wasn't. She portrayed a mom who was a fit mother, but in reality, I don't think she was.
I mean, this is fan fiction, but do you suppose that if you're in a situation where you feel obligated to have a huge family, and maybe it's not what you would otherwise choose,
right,
or your natural gift that you feel pressured to, and then you have how many, six kids?
Yeah.
And you're just like in too deep?
Yeah.
That could have contributed to it?
Yeah, I do. Because it does also seem from what I read and from what this podcast talked about that the younger children got it worse. And it almost feels like she resented them more in some way. The work she had to do in parenting. We're talking like...
Are you familiar with Ballerina Farm?
No, what's that?
Ballerina Farm is the handle of another Mormon Instagram influencer. She has like nine kids or something crazy, and she had her kid, it was like 2 weeks old, and she just competed in like the Miss Universe or Mrs.
Oh, I did. Yes, yes,
World,
I saw that.
Something.
Yeah.
And she you know, they have a farm and she like fucking churns butter or whatever, but she's like super hot.
Yeah.
And like, she's sort of doesn't hide this, but it's not like talked about too much that her father-in-law owns like JetBlue.
Oh, okay.
So that's it's helpful. Like, exactly. Like, it gets a lot easier to have 50 yeah. kids
when you have a if staff.
You have like, exactly. If you have people on payroll.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're, yeah, you get but to that, just but it doesn't matter. Spend your time looking pretty. Hot hobbies.
We all know, though, that those facts don't matter when you're scrolling and you just see this beautiful, right. hot, perfect mom who's 2 weeks postpartum and in the Mrs. World pageant.
Yep.
Because a staff can't make you look like right. 2 weeks later like that.
Right.
So you can easily fall into the jealousy trap, I think.
Absolutely. And it is, I am so sad and devastated for that family and for the kids in that situation and the community and all the people involved. But there is a fascination that I have with watching people like that. Like when I find out that the Real Housewives are, you know, getting
hauled away. Wait, why? What is it that you love?
I don't know. I mean, it's got to be that Schadenfreude thing that like we like to watch somebody who's seems like they have it
has all, it all.
Mm-hmm. Like fall from grace in a way. And
you're
and
like,
I just knew it. Yeah. I just feel like anytime people try to portray perfection, that you only have to peel back a little bit of the layers to realize that that is all a facade and not the reality. And I think as somebody who's been, I was thinking about this, in a couple years, I will have spent half of my life in the public eye. And I think you have spent over half of your life in the public mm-hmm. eye. And that's a crazy thing to think about. When you think about how public we've been, how, I don't know, maybe reality TV has in a way pushed us to be, I don't know, more authentic, or being on there for so long, you have to kind of just surrender and be like, I can't pretend and I can't keep up the.
Yeah, we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Right. I can't do that for forever. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like you and I and people like us sit on the other side of that like spectrum of like people in the public eye where it's very real and very like, I don't know. Yeah, authentic and candid and vulnerable
yeah,
and whatever.
I often debate about it because I feel like, you know how I have that tendency to be self-deprecating, and the consequences of that are that uh-huh. a lot of people are fucking idiots and don't. I'm also other deprecating. Right. And and that they don't always understand that joke or that comedic sensibility yeah, and then yeah. they just take your word for it. Oh right. yeah, she's an idiot or she's a loser or she's whatever. And I'm right. like, wait a minute.
I'm like, yeah, wait, hang
I was
on.
Being
a sec.
Humble.
I saw some article come out about the top earners on YouTube or something, and one of them is like a little kid who's unboxing stuff. And I'm just like,
that Ryan
that
kid
is insane to me. They're like, it's scary. It's, and how do you tell a kid to like work hard and go to med school when like mm-hmm. somebody's, you know, we need plumbers, we need dentists, we need, you know.
You just want them to learn a trade.
Custodians. We need people who are going to, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember when that shifted and schools would ask kids yep. what they want to be when they grow up, and then now they say YouTuber.
Yep. For a while. Yeah. We've even seen this studies come out, you know, every few years. And even on this show, we've talked about the different responses. I remember way back when we talked about this and the number one answer was celebrity assistant, like an assistant to a celebrity. 'Cause that looked very,
that's
you know,
so
like,
sad.
Yeah. And then it went to YouTuber, and that's just crazy to me. It's like, mm-hmm. I want to be sort of associated with famous people. And now I can learn that even just being a regular kid, I could be a famous person. And the talk, the language, like the way kids speak now, mm-hmm. it sounds like they're doing a YouTube, like, video. Hi, guys. Welcome to my channel. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. Da-da. And I'm like, oh, my God. Little 12-year-old girls all sound like they're going to tell me, like, what they just bought from Sephora.
Watch me get dressed. Or watch me get ready, whatever they say.
Get ready with me. Yeah.
Well, if you were watching me get ready, you would see me putting on my Lumi deodorant.
And amen, sister.
Loving every minute of it because I'm doing everyone a big favor.
Yes.
Because Lumi deodorant has magical things inside that eat up that bacteria, prevent you from stinking up the joint. It's so nice. And you can put it anywhere on your body. So they have the cream and the wipes and the stick. And you can put it on whatever part of your body that smells. Your feet, your privates, your butt.
Yeah.
Whatever. Under your boobs.
Yes.
Created by an OBGYN. Blocks odor all day, controls odor for up to 72 hours, baking soda free, paraben free, pH balanced. It's good stuff. They have really nice scents. Toasted coconut is my favorite. And they have a special offer for you. For our listeners, new customers get $5 off a Lumi starter pack with code BRAINCANDY5 at LumiDeodorant.com. That equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you visit LumiDeodorant.com and use code BRAINCANDY5. And it's that pack that includes all those different types. So you can try the cream and the wipes and stuff, which are great for travel, but it's all wonderful. You will love it. Trust on that.
Yes.
By the way, because people like to have a heads up.
Yeah.
We have a guest today.
Oh yeah.
And it's so fun. You know how I love Don Rickles, right?
Yes.
Well, his daughter, Mindy, was kind enough to agree to talk to me, and we had such a fun chat.
How
and
cool.
And we were just talking about Don, how much I love him, and how special he was. And if you're not familiar with Don, you should check out the Don Rickles channel on YouTube. It's hilarious. And I just
non-problematic love YouTube content. This is what I'm here for.
Well, some people probably do think it's problematic because he makes fun of literally every race, gender, height, size. But that's what makes it funny to me is instead of like this thing that we do now where it's like you can't make fun of anybody because it can be disturbing to people, he makes fun of everyone. And no one is safe. And it was considered like an honor to be roasted by Don. Yeah. And the reason why it was so effective is because you knew that he wasn't actually like that. And that he's sort of making fun of these stereotypes and whatever. Yes. And it's sophisticated, but it seems like the opposite. He's a legend. I adore him. And his daughter was a doll. So that's coming up later.
Can't wait.
As you were, Sarah.
All right. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about before that? Did you see, as somebody who is very passionate about the Apollo ventures, did you see that there was another moon landing that went not so well?
Yeah, I did. I was sad.
Like, to me, when I saw the video and heard about this, it reminded me of how you said that in... what was Apollo 13? Apollo 8? What's the one that where the guy just dropped something?
Yeah, Apollo 13.
Where it's like we've spent all that millions and billions of dollars on everything. And we didn't think maybe... and then it just like tipped over. It landed and then just tipped over. We didn't think maybe we should have some more supportive landing gear or some situation where we could correct it. And now it's tipped over and it's charged with solar panels and it fell over on the side where the solar panels are. So now this thing is stuck dead in a way on its side. And I took a few pictures before it died, but it kind of feels like a wah, wah.
Obviously these are brilliant engineers that work on all this. So do you think it's the case that there's always an element of things happen and you can't control everything?
Or a rock do you think on that the ground. Like... We couldn't control for a rock on the ground. Let me see. If I'm landing on another planet where the terrain is unstable and unpredictable, I'm going to account for maybe a boulder or two.
Okay, so you think these are dumbasses?
No, okay, well, let's not go that far. I just think that sometimes, here's what I think they needed to do.
Uh-huh, okay.
You know when you write a paper and you've read it 1,000 times and you swear there are no mistakes in it or there's something that you didn't think about and then you give it to somebody else and then they're like, oh, what about this, this, this? And you're like too close to it to see the problem.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You think they need like proofreaders, kind of.
Kinda.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's...
To be like troubleshooting, saying like, well, what happens if the wind blows? Or I guess there's no wind up there, but...
Like, it feels like we should do all of the building of it and then send it to another group to give a look-see at. Because it feels like they were too caught up on the launching, the whatever it was in it, and then forgot this one
thing. I just love that you are, like, tearing them apart. You're like, a rock, Susie?
Because when you see this thing land, and my favorite was watching the guy from NASA, or no, not from NASA. It was a private company that did this. I can't remember
what their name is. It wasn't the usual SpaceX.
Yeah, and he's giving an example. He's got this little model of it, and he's on some talk show talking about how it tipped over, and he just takes the little model. And then just flips it on its side. And I was like,
no.
I didn't need it. Just like, that made it look sadder. I don't know. It just feels like the way it was designed. I would have thrown some airbags on the side or something to pop it back up.
Or like this put feels some like solar panels like on the butt and the back side, you know?
Yeah, or something. I
love
feels...
that we think we could have done better.
I'm like, guys, I've read The
guys,
Martian.
Think.
I know. I've had a lot of dreams aboard the International Space Station. Here's what's happening.
This. Yeah.
Right. So.
Hey, better luck next time.
Better luck next time. And I'm just glad I did. I heard a while back that they were putting together, I think it's NASA's doing this all-female team that's going to the moon, or that was in the works or something. I'm just glad that this didn't happen to the all-female team.
Well, that's the thing. Did you see that truck that like was hanging off that bridge the other day?
No.
A huge semi truck, you know, with the what do they call the front part of the truck? You know, like the cab.
Yeah.
I think it's called the cab.
Yeah.
And that part was literally hanging over this bridge and they had to rescue it in a helicopter. And I was like, oh, that truck driver. And then I saw it was a lady and I was like, oh God, that's all we need.
Right.
These women drivers.
Meanwhile,
bitch.
There are trucks all over I-70, the highway that to the mountain through here, that are overturned right and left, and it's often almost always male truck drivers. Yeah. Let's call them male truck drivers from now on. Male truck drivers? It's kind of like female comedian. Did you see that Nike has unveiled what they call them kits, the uniforms and like the team uniform? They'll be like new, they'll call them kits. So Nike has released a new kits for the National Women's Soccer League. And this came after many of the players who are female in the Women's Soccer League were complaining about having to play in white shorts. And so it's always been the rule that when you're, like, away, you wear white shorts. When you're home, you wear black shorts. Like, that's always been, like, the case. Like
in
white,
soccer?
Yeah. Like, home and away, you have two different uniforms. And usually it's, like, white bottoms for the uniforms. And women were saying this gives us, something to worry about when we're on the field. We don't want to be worrying about our period and our uniforms.
Sure.
And there was a quote from one of the... I don't know, heads of maybe the player representative or somebody from the organization who said, that women have a lot of concern, and it serves as a big distraction, or it's been a big distraction to play in white shorts because of fears about menstruating and period. And I read maybe 6 different articles on this because I noticed something in the first 2 articles that I had seen. Prompted my little journey down this road was me seeing something that came up on Instagram that said, because of women's concerns over their period has led Nike to change the uniforms. So I saw it. The first time I heard about this was connected to how women feel about their period and playing in white shorts. So when I read the article, the first article I read, I was so surprised because there was no mention of periods in there. And the second article I read, I was so surprised because there were no mentions of periods in there. And the third article I read, I was so surprised because there was no mentions of periods in there. And I was like, why is everybody scared to say? So what they would do is they would use half of the quote and they would say, are female players wanted a change of kit because it's been a distraction. End of quote. And I'm like, wow, they're scared to talk about periods in news articles. And then I found one and all of them were written by women, which I thought was like, huh? And then the one article I saw that did mention it was written by a man. And he mentioned that, which I was wondering if I was thinking maybe as a female writing for ESPN or writing for that, there was a fear there in writing and talking about periods and then bringing that to the editor and them saying, nobody wants to hear a story about periods and fearing that it would be deleted or edited from that.
And that's what you think it must be?
I don't know. I was like, that's like Sarah's got a theory, because I thought it was interesting that I read multiple articles on this and only a few mentioned the word period, and most of them didn't. And it was the ones that were for big news, like ESPN, ABC, like big organizations that didn't mention period. And it was the smaller, like,
I guess there's a sense of it being indiscreet. Like,
I didn't like it. It made me angry. It made me like, why can't we just say what it is?
Well, because I was trying to think of like a male equivalent would be like boners, right? So, like if their uniforms were too.
Seems to not be affecting Major League Baseball because they changed up their uniforms and their pants are see-through.
You're kidding me.
Oh, it's like a whole thing.
I have been reading about how what the fans want like if they buy a jersey of their favorite player. Is, you know, something that's substantial and like they used to be, but that the materials and stuff have changed a lot over the years to be more aerodynamic more suited for athletics.
Players, right.
But that translates to the consumer as like flimsy.
Oh, and like I know this material they're talking about. That quick
and
dry.
And instead of like, embroidered stuff. It's all like iron on because it's more aerodynamic.
Right. And not as heavy and not as itchy. A whole bunch of things.
Do you think that's why the pants are thinner? Because it's probably sleeker or something? They should just run naked. I could solve that problem for them right now.
That really, it, no problem. Yeah. That, I don't know what they were thinking here, but they need to redo them. Yeah.
I'm thinking about how much I'm enjoying my naked wine.
Cheers to that, Suze. Me too.
What are you drinking?
I'll drink a little Savvy B.
Me too. Naked Wines is great. This is wine that comes right to your door, but I love it because I like to joke that I've never had a glass I didn't like of wine. Like when they make you do that song and dance at a restaurant where they're like the tasting shit. Yeah. I hate all that performance. It's not corked. It's just not. You don't need to do all that. Anyway, but it's not true. Like there are glasses I have had that I didn't like that I think I'm a little bit pickier than I like to admit. Yes. And so I've been very impressed with how the wines that Naked Wines have sent to me based on this quiz that I took were actually wines I like. Mm-hmm. And they come from winemakers I'm not familiar with. So it's something new and different and also, I like to support the winemakers directly. There's no middleman. It's just a really fun process. I think people would really like it. And I feel like this is the best deal out of all of our partners.
Yes,
this one is
it
like,
really is.
You have to take advantage of this. So head to nakedwines.com/braincandy and click enter voucher in the top right when you go to the website. Put in brain candy for the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/braincandy and use the code and password brain candy and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/braincandy, code and password brain candy for $100 off your first 6 bottles. It's great.
Okay, so this is the article that I, or the story that I've been most excited to share with you. So remember a little while ago you were talking about how you can go to a morgue and you can do an autopsy or like go like work with the cadavers?
Yeah.
So when this popped up, I'm like, oh, I have to click on it and I have to watch all of it. So a woman named Dr. Lishman, who is a consultant of histopathy, she's a histopathologist at the Peterborough City Hospital in England. She does autopsies and now she consults and works in pathology. So basically finding out how diseases of the tissue, how people died, cause of death, things like that. And it was really cool. It's this, she goes through an entire autopsy and does it with a, you don't have to worry if you're squeamish, no blood and guts. She has life-size models and like cutouts of each organ so that she'll hold up and like show you the size. And she goes through step by step of the entire process of an autopsy, and which she calls it post-mortem evaluation. Like they don't even use the word autopsy, which I thought was interesting. They call it like post, when you do a post-mortem, she kept using that. It's like a shorthand for mm-hmm. it. And there were so many cool things I learned. And so I wanted to share with you a few of the interesting things that I took notes on during this little live autopsy lecture. One of the things that I thought really pushes back on what we learned in school is she said almost every lung that she cuts into is black and is polluted. And it, unless you died really young or lived in an area where you were not around any big city and you never went near pollution, every lung that she cuts into looks like, and she said, you know, when you take the subway and then you cough and it, you got like, or you blow your nose and there's that black stuff. So that's what the inside of your lungs of everybody that she's cut into looks like.
That's
I couldn't
disgusting.
Believe that because we're sold
That's
this like,
the,
you remember when like DARE came to school and they were like, this is a healthy lung. This is a diseased lung. In reality, like the smokers,
totally.
She said the smokers' lungs will start to have holes in it where the lung is broken down and there's repair that needs to be done. But every
yeah.
lung has black stuff and is polluted inside. That was shocking to me.
And, but there's nothing we can do about
no,
it, right?
Nothing we could do about
yeah.
it. That was a lot of it that you realize nothing we could do about it. Other thing that was interesting, the liver is fucking huge. She held
yeah.
the liver up and the liver is like the size of a dinner plate. And she said,
yeah,
it depending on how big you are, your liver grows and changes and it's all tucked way up underneath your rib cage. And she
mm-hmm.
said, unless you are unhealthily thin, you can't even feel the liver, or unless it has a tumor in it, you can't even feel the liver because it's so well hidden inside your rib cage. Our body
mm-hmm.
does a really good job of protecting its own organs and like hiding things in places. And
mm-hmm.
it's just crazy to me because I think about how fragile we are and how easy like rib cages break. And she went through each organ and what its purpose is and, you know, what it does, what you can live with and what you could live without. And what, if you damage it, is really detrimental to the body, like a spleen. If you rupture your spleen or do anything to your spleen, that is so, has so many, like, it's vascular and has so much blood go into it that you will bleed. It's a
You're
very
goner.
Useless organ. I mean, it's not useless, but it's not one, it's one we could live without. But if you damage it, serious consequences for that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, if you lose your spleen, it's what filters out a lot of bacteria and viruses in your body. So those people have to be really diligent about staying up to date on their vaccines and making sure that no foreign things get into their body. And then it made me think of the person from the challenge who lost a spleen in an accident on a challenge, had their spleen removed in Uruguay, and I guarantee you is an anti-vaxxer. And I was just like, I hope this guy's doctor is telling him he really needs to worry because he has no spleen. So
yeah,
that was a little interesting side note.
I'll tell you what we do need, yes. And that is cat food that does not smell, and your cats will be like, Suze, thank you. And I'm like, Lava, Ethel, you're welcome.
I love your
cats. Because these poor cats were subsisting on dry kibble.
Ugh,
the equivalent garbage. Of like bar snacks.
Yeah, saltines for their whole life.
Their lives. Yeah. And then I gave them Smalls because it was the only wet cat food that wasn't disgusting and smelly. And they are so happy. And it is such a joy because this is like human grade proper.
Yes.
Delicious food for these little furballs, which, by the way, if you have a pet and you love them, I've heard a lot from a lot of you in the last few weeks. I love mine, too. And that's why I give them Smalls. So
there you go. Take care of
you. You should consider
ones.
That.
With Smalls.
It's 2024. Are you feeding your cat kibble, a.k.a. bar food? Head to smalls.com/braincandy and use promo code braincandy at checkout for 50% off your first order plus free shipping. That's the best offer you'll find, but you have to use our code braincandy for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's promo code braincandy for 50% off your order plus free shipping.
Okay, so other little fun facts that I have one more that I want to give you, that this is something that we've kind of heard rumors of. Have you heard that your nails and your hair keep growing after you die?
Yes.
Well, she set the record straight and she said, absolutely not. Nothing grows. Everything stops. When blood flow stops to areas, all of those functions stop. But what does happen is the body becomes severely dehydrated. And when the body becomes dehydrated, the skin shrinks. So if you have a man who has a bald head and then he passes away and he goes through that dehydration of the body, it may appear that his hair has grown a couple millimeters because the skin on his scalp has shrunk. And the same things happen to our fingers, that our skin shrinks. And then it exposes more of the nail bed. So it looks like our nails have grown and our hair has grown. Ah, gross.
That is so gross.
And my favorite of all of them, this is the last one I'll leave you with. Have you ever wondered what that little pink thing on the inside of your eye is?
Yeah, there's that little bump.
So that's called the plica semularis. And it used to be a third eyelid that would blink horizontally. And you can see this in the action of many other animals. Cat, I think some cats have that it blinks the other direction. And we used to have that. Vestigial structures.
The fuck?
I know, I want that one back. Like, what the fuck?
That's so cool.
Isn't that cool? So check that out.
Don't you think it's funny that like there aren't, you know how most things, there's somebody with one. Like somebody has like seven toes on one side.
Yeah.
Like I've never heard of anybody that's has like that extra eyelid.
That's a really good point.
You know what I mean?
But maybe there are those people. And then the people who think that there are lizard people out there really just saw one of those guys.
Maybe.
I don't know. Well, I know.
Maybe. It's all foreign to me. But I'm fine with foreign things, and that's why I love Babbel.
Oh,
language learning. I'm still working on my Portuguese, and you know, I'm not great, but I need to work on it because like I need to build confidence.
Yes.
And so that's what I'm working on. And I find it really fun, and we do it as a family and practice and stuff. And it's just like a way to engage and, I don't know, light up parts of my brain.
I think you're so right. You know, we are on our phones so often. Anytime I can replace phone time with something that's also going to educate me and help me achieve a goal, sign me up. So I get that same experience of feeling like I'm, I don't know, gaming in a way.
Yeah. And it feels like just sort of you're bettering yourself, but it's fun. And it's like, it feels like a game, but you're actually doing something useful instead of just mindlessness. And it focuses on like real life conversations. So that's useful.
Yes.
And I hope to put it to use someday. Here's a special deal for our listeners right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/braincandy. Get 55% off at babbel.com/braincandy, spelled BABBEL.com/braincandy. Rules and restrictions may apply. You'll love it. It's like, they say it's like a semester of learning. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like just a few times on the app is the equivalent. Wow. Of like,
that's great.
You'll love it. Yes. Okay. So let's welcome to the show Mindy Rickles, who is a gem, but is also a comedian in her own right. And just, I really appreciate that she's working to keep Don's legacy alive. There was a New Yorker short documentary film by Judd Apatow focusing on the best friendship between Don Rickles and Bob Newhart. And for whatever reason, Don, it was very important to Don that people remember him and that his name sort of lives on. And so he would tell everybody that, like, don't let them forget me. He said that to John Stamos. So John made a whole chapter in his book, his memoir about Don Rickles. And like Bob Saget was always promoting him. And like Jimmy Kimmel, certain people that loved him really try to have new generation of people discover him. And so I saw that short film and I thought, well, I want to do that too. Like, so I reached out through the Don Rickles channel on Instagram, follows me. And they were like, yeah, you know, you've been such a big supporter from the beginning. And I'm like, yeah, I still do that. Because I think that if people check him out and see the bigger picture, I guess I want to encourage people to have a thicker skin. Mm-hmm. A lot of what I gripe about, that sometimes there's pushback from listeners, is just encouraging people to be more resilient and to laugh at themselves and to realize like, it's not always that serious. You know, when I gripe about Gen Z and all that, a lot of it has to do with this. It's like, life is so hard. I'm not denying that. But we have to learn to laugh at ourselves. Yeah. And that was his whole point, was like, we're all goofballs. We're all doofuses. Yeah. Life on this earth makes no sense.
Right.
We have to enjoy and laugh at each other, but in love, with like a foundation of kindness.
Yes.
And so that's why I wanted to have her on. And I really appreciate her indulging me. So welcome to the show, Mindy Rickles, and check out the Don Rickles channel on YouTube. Mindy Rickles, what an honor. Thank you so much for coming on Brain Candy.
Thank you.
Beyond excited to talk to you.
Oh, no, that's great. Thank you so much.
I really feel honored because I was saying when I wanted to interview you, when I watched the Bob and Don love story documentary that the New Yorker and Judd Apatow did, I thought, I want to just do what Don wanted, which was to keep his name alive and to honor him. And so that's why I harassed you and forced you into this nightmare, because felt like a call to action to me. Like, okay, I'm going to do it. But do you feel like that's a burden for you, that you have this big job of, you know, you got to like keep people talking about this amazing person?
Right. No, because that's what my father ingrained in me from a very young age, to keep his name alive. So, no, I'm doing whatever I can to keep that going. So I appreciate you, you know, thinking of him and wanting to have me on, because it would have been very thrilling for him, for sure.
No, because even just preparing for this, Mindy, I need a therapist, because I cried three times. Like, every time I'd watch a clip, that was really cool or special, I'd be like, oh, there's another one. It's so amazing. Whether it was an interview or people talking about him. And I just felt like this is so important, even though it's something so silly. It's comedy is serious business, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's very serious. And, you know, he, that was his life. And so he, you know, was funny in all aspects of his life, but he, his friendship with Bob meant so much to him, as, and also with my mother and Bob's wife, who recently passed away as well. They had a wonderful friendship, the four of them, and they traveled all over the world together. And they just had really great times. Even though my dad and Bob were such opposites, they really were the best of friends.
I thought, I noticed in the short film that I think it was Bob's son said that maybe what helped sustain the relationship was that they were not competitive. They were totally different types of comedy people. One was a monologist and one was doing more interactive work with the audience. And so it wasn't threatening, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. No, they were very opposite. I mean, Bob was a much more intellectual comic and he really thought, you know, about his material to make it exactly precise. And it was, you know, so funny, but in a way that he really knew exactly what he was doing. Whereas my dad was a little more free form. I mean, he knew what he was doing, but he kind of, you know, saw the audience and did react, and certain things came right off the cuff. And certain things didn't make sense at all. But because he had such an incredible delivery and because he had all this warmth, the audience laughed. It was never done. The insulting was never done in any kind of a malicious way. So they always knew it was coming from a good place, the audience. He never had a problem with that, which was great.
Right. His nickname, Mr. Warmth, was ironic, but also actually true.
That's right. That's right. For sure.
I watched this clip of Ray Romano talking about how what you just said, how it was like cadence, cadence, cadence. Sometimes it didn't even make any sense, but it didn't matter. It was still effing funny because the delivery, you didn't even have to know what he was talking about.
That's right. It happened many times on The Tonight Show, you know, with Johnny Carson. He would be a host or a guest and whoever was on with him, you know, he'd love to sit on the couch and make fun of whoever he was with. That was what was so much fun about it, because it was actually like sitting in someone's living room and just maybe having my dad poke fun at them. But they always, you know, loved it. And the interactions with whoever it was, you know, he was on once with Denzel Washington. And
that was the best.
Yes. Whoever he was on with, you know, there was always a terrific interaction and it went well. Thank God. It always, he knew how far to go. He knew when to pull back. And that was, he was really a genius at that.
Genius. And I hate when people say that about men when it's like not true. And it's true in this case. Right. And that Denzel Washington one was such a great example of that, because Denzel didn't have to stay on the stage.
That's right.
And Letterman pointed out that like, no, he just wanted to witness this craft.
That's right.
It was amazing. And then even with that One Night Only Spike TV special, they showed a clip of Dawn being Dawn. And Tracy Morgan was saying, that's comedy, that's comedy. And it's always the people that you would kind of worry, what if they're offended? What if they take it personally? And they were like, the ones cheering him on. And I feel like we need more of that. Don't you feel like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, my father could poke fun at Robert De Niro and you would expect him to get very angry about it. But, you know, he loved it. Or Frank Sinatra. He knew he was the one guy that he knew Frank was not going to punch him. If he, whatever he might say to him and the jokes, that's how he started out with Frank Sinatra, sort of discovering him in the lounge and all that. And I think nowadays, well, there's a lot of, what's woke and what's correct to say. And I think then it was more sort of free. He could just, he knew he didn't really have boundaries. He knew what his boundaries were, but he was able to really interact in just an incredible way, and no one else could do it the way he did.
I'm so glad you mentioned that about Robert De Niro because I was struck by that with the Golden Globes with Joe Coy. People have different opinions about whether that performance went well, but he interacted with Robert De Niro and really took him to task. And I was so impressed with Robert laughing so hard. And I thought that's what he did with Rickles and why it was so awesome, because it wasn't about him. He's great. He's not worried about anything. He's just gonna laugh. Who cares? And I kind of wanted more of that in Hollywood in general,
Right.
and in
No,
people in general.
definitely think so. Hollywood, there's a barrier, and the toughest audience is a sort of industry audience. And I think, for the Golden Globes, that Joe Coy, he really had a very hard job, and he had a very short amount of time to get ready for that. So I can only imagine how tough that must have been.
I don't
And
envy that.
yeah, no, not at all. So I think my dad, he also had a reputation that he of 50, 60 years, so people knew what he was
Yeah.
like. It's harder. He said that when he first started in the lounge 50 years ago, and he would insult the guys at the bar, they weren't like, oh, that's a riot. No, the
Right.
owner would get out, you're done. So it's certainly not something that just came right away when he was young and didn't
Right.
have the kind of credentials or the technique that he got just through the years. It's very difficult. So when you're in that kind of a position and you have to comment on, the actors in the audience and the films, I mean, it's very tough to be able to just walk that very fine line and be a success with it.
I mean, it is a testament to how amazing your dad was at his job. And I don't know if it's a gift or just what, but it did feel like you said genius. You're so fascinating to me because you seem like a perfect mix of sensibilities of maybe your parents, because I was watching on the YouTube channel Behind the Dawn, and you do this amazing impression of your dad. Is he watching me? Is he watching me? That whole
Yes.
thing. I was like,
Yes.
that's him. But yet I still feel like you have that sort of like even keel thing that he said that your mom had.
That's right. My mother was very, very low key. She was a Valium. And actually, I don't know, imitated, impersonated him on a Netflix special with Jeff Ross, where I played him when he was in the Marines. And actually, I was him insulting people. So I think that yes, I'm definitely a combination of both my parents. My mother, had to be someone that was very laid back and could he could make jokes about her, and she had a great sense of humor about herself. She never took it personally or was sensitive to it, because they wouldn't have had that kind of balance if she couldn't deal with that. So I think it really worked out very well. And no, I definitely, she was more shy, and it was difficult at first for her when they would be in Las Vegas and people would come backstage to the dressing room and line up to come in. And my mother had to sort of, she had to be the hostess while they waited for my father, who was getting dressed. And, it took her time through their marriage to get more and more comfortable with meeting these new people that were very excited to be there to meet my father. But then my father came in, and they were ready, and my father just went at them, and they loved it. That's what they were waiting for. So yeah, I think they had a really great combination, and I hope that I am a combination of the two of them. Yeah, definitely.
it seems like such a cool balance. And
Right.
I'm sure your particular experience was fascinating and had
Yeah.
challenges and
Sure.
benefits. But I try to imagine what it would be like to be in your shoes because I imagine that you want to elevate the legacy, but you are a person too and want your own identity. How do you balance that?
It's something that I've learned to live with. I mean, I've done stand up and have a Don Rickles channel also with my father's production company, and my husband's doing a podcast actually with it's called The Real Brady Bros with Barry Williams and Christopher Knight, and they go over the episodes of the old Brady Bunch. So I think I've moved into other areas working on different things, but still sort of maintaining the feeling of my father, because I've always been so similar to him. He's sort of always with me. I never lose that. And even with, the YouTube channel, working with Tony O, his road manager, and Michael, and it's been a really, really great experience doing that, I have to say, for sure.
I just want to thank you because I know that it's sacrificial on some level and that we are so thankful.
Oh, well, he would be
Honestly.
very thrilled just to know, all these years later, and people are still talking about him and still appreciating him. And when he would say, is he laughing? Is he laughing? I mean, even with the big stars, if it was Steve Martin at a show or Martin Short, he still felt like it was all new. He never took it for granted. He never just took it with the assumption that, oh, they better laugh. He always hoped that they would, and that he would do a good job, and so he always had that freshness about him that I think was really great.
It fascinates me how I think that he knew that sense of like, okay, every day is this new battle, and that's why he would go out to the Matador music, right?
That's
He
right.
sensed that he was going
Right.
to battle, but
That's
yet
right.
he didn't have a set like a traditional comic.
No, he never wrote down his material. It was sort of like it just came from, as I said, years in the lounge. When his act, if his he was doing imitations of his mother, his aunt, and they weren't laughing, he would maybe go to a guy in the bar, what do you think? Why are you wearing that shirt? And he would start sort of insulting them, and it kind of came from that, and then different bits came from that, and it developed through the years, but he never wrote down material or thought, oh, this is going to be a joke I'm going to write. And people couldn't write for him either. They had to just sort of let it go and let him do what he wanted, because it was impossible for anyone to write for him because he was so unique with what he did.
I never knew that until I saw on the Dinner with Don AARP special with Judd Apatow when he said that he
Yes.
had submitted some material to for Don to do, and they were like, he does his, he doesn't, nobody writes for him. That's incredible.
That's right. Yeah. No, he could never be confined to that kind of thing. I mean, years ago he did Saturday Night Live, and they worked all week on certain sets and what it would be. And then the night of the show, he gets a connection with the audience. And he just had to kind of go off on his own, and it was great, but the actors definitely had to be on their toes to figure out what was going on and how they would respond and that kind of thing, because he knew exactly what he was doing. So, and it always turned out great.
Whenever you decided, I'm going to give this comedy thing a whirl, and I know that like you were your own person and had your own whole thing going, how did you approach it? Just like completely separate.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I was always similar to him. I was always funny like he was, and I started it later. It's just sort of the kind of thing that I fell into. I didn't really go, this is what I'm going to do now. And it worked out, and I did, you know, I've done a lot of shows and toured and that kind of thing. And right now I'm starting also with my husband at a podcast with another comic, Christine King, and it's called Rickles and King. And I think it's about the way I was raised, as opposed to she was from the East Coast and from a totally different kind of a background. And it's the differences that when someone says, oh, how did you grow up? It's sort of going through that and going through how someone else might have perceived it and that kind of thing. So I think, you know, I like to dabble in a bunch of different things and kind of fit in where I can and what, you know, I'm the
That
most
is so
comfortable.
cool, though. You're so low key and humble, and I know you're not like grandiose, but that is really cool. And it's really, see, my parents' low bar lifestyle over there, you know, I didn't have so that it's just a real challenge, I think, to make your own way.
Yes, it definitely is. And a lot of children of celebrities, you know, there's often a struggle, which makes sense, certainly when you go into the exact same field that they're in, you know, the comparisons, but it's not easy. And there's a great deal of therapy that is involved
Yes.
going into it. But it's really something that you have to kind of balance. I have a really great home life with my husband, and my sons are in their 20s. And so I think having that has really helped me to have a balance. I don't think if I had that, if I had done this when I was in my 20s or whatever, I think for me personally, it would have been much more difficult to not have that sort of backup and know that I always have them to fall back on and that they're always going to be there for me, that kind of
Yeah.
thing.
I mean, it is such a balance, and it feels like you had a firm foundation, and I'm sure that makes all the difference.
I think
But
so.
I, like I said when I started, I feel like this is a, you know, you've taken on the task of maintaining a legacy and also having your own identity, and that is a big job. Whenever he would say, keep my name alive, which has been repeated by several people. Like I saw in the John Stamos book, there's his memoir, there's a whole chapter about Don Rickles, which I loved.
Yes.
And a lot of people know that this was important. Why do you think it was so important? It's almost as if it felt like he didn't believe everyone that was already telling him he was amazing.
Yeah, no, he definitely, I think, and a lot of performers have that. There's definitely an insecurity there and a need to constantly prove yourself. And even with all of the accolades and the fame, he still wanted to hear that. And he still, I think that's what made him not jaded, because he was never like full of himself. He always felt like, well, I hope this one likes me. And when he would do a show, he would say, you know, I'm a nice guy, and this isn't really serious, and I want you to like me, and I hope that you do like me. So it was done in that kind of way, and he always felt that way. He really did feel that way in life as he did on stage.
That's really hard to believe, but
Yeah,
I think you're right.
but true. He was always very excited when he got the film Casino with Robert De Niro, and Martin Scorsese asked him to do that. He was thrilled. It wasn't like, oh, well, this is expected. It was very exciting for him, and he was so thrilled to be doing it. So all kinds of different things that came along the way, working with Clint Eastwood years ago in Run Silent, Run Deep. These were all people that he was thrilled to meet, excited to meet as somebody, as a fan would meet them, but then they became friends, and he could joke with them, and he could be very self-deprecating, and they loved that. You know, that's how he developed such close relationships with a lot of these people.
He would often mention in his interviews that he had studied at the American A Academy of Dramatic Arts. Do you think that there was something in him that felt like that was the thing that he wanted still was
Oh,
like,
yes. I think
yeah.
he always wanted, you know, to be an actor. He wanted to be a performer. He had a mother who was very much a stage mother, and she certainly pushed him along, but I think he was always a performer and he didn't really know exactly where he fit in. So he started at the American Academy and he went to class with Grace Kelly and people like that, and he was in awe of that. But it developed over time, and he was on so many different shows, you know, in the 60s and Gilligan's Island and the Andy Griffith Show and all these different shows. And I think his comedy developed through that, and he found his niche, you know, and then he started going to Las Vegas and working in the lounge, and then he got to the main showroom. And I think through that, he kind of found his place and where he belonged, where he felt really comfortable.
I mean, I'm just glad that he found his way there because it's like a public service, you know, because it is like a ministry. Comedy and humor, it does good to the soul, I think.
Absolutely, for sure.
I bet
Absolutely.
you a lot of people too are like me, where their dads or their families are so into Don, and so it's like this family generational connection.
Absolutely.
And I connect with my family members with Don's material. And I was asking my brother what he would ask you, and he wanted to know. There was I guess Jim Carrey had done a Don Rickles impersonation. Are you familiar with it?
Not off the top of my head, but I could
I'm
see
sure,
that.
yeah, I'm sure you've seen a million
Yeah.
things. And I had never seen it either. So I was watching it on YouTube and I was amazed by it because I felt like it was pretty accurate and impressive. And he wanted to know if Don had an opinion about it, if Don was flattered by it or offended, but maybe he didn't know about it.
You know, I don't know specifically if he knew about that, but if anyone that was the caliber of Jim Carrey did an impression of him, he would be thrilled. You know, he for sure would be very excited, and it would be something like, "Dad, did you hear that Jim Carrey did an Oh, he did? How was it? What do you say about it?" You know, so he would have been very, yes, anyone like that, he would have been very excited to hear impersonated him and thought of
My
him for sure.
gosh, I'm gonna send it to you, and but I love
Oh
that.
no, I'd love to see it. Absolutely.
Okay, we have one last question that we ask everybody that comes on. What do you keep in the trunk of your car?
In the trunk of my car, I mean
Yes.
my husband. No. What do I keep in there? God only knows. I mean, I hope there's some, I don't know if there's a tire, and if there is, I have no idea how to change. So my husband does everything for me. So if there's
God
a first
bless
aid
him.
kit, that would be good because I would need that when I'm driving.
I love that you don't know what's in there. This
I
is
have no
great.
idea. I have no idea. I barely know what kind of car I drive. So I know. You know, what can I say?
I'm totally fascinated by you. You are a treasure. I think that
Oh,
you
thank
are
you.
so funny and interesting and just a fascinating gal.
Thank
So,
you. No, I'm really happy we were able to finally do this for sure. I'm
no.
really happy about
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You're awesome. I
that.
love you. And you're off the
Thank you. No, it was great. It was really
Oh.
fun. Completely painless, I have to tell you.